Go to 2 Samuel, and we're going to look at the entire book first. We're looking at the life of David, and we're now at the point where Saul is dead. 30 years of pursuing David, Saul is dead, and the days of fleeing are over. We covered the 8 Psalms that were Psalms of fleeing. When David is running from Saul from cave to cave and place to place, and the thoughts that are in his mind we have seen in the Psalms that have the superscription over them that tie them back into a historical period in the book of Samuel. We're through with that. We now need to do 2 more things. We need to look at Psalm 32 and Psalm 51. Because they both revolve about David's great sin of adultery and murder with Bathsheba. And now David is king over all Israel. He has fled for 30 years. He is now on the throne. And that leads us to the book of 2 Samuel. The book of 2 Samuel divides into 3 parts. 1. David in triumph. Part 1, David in triumph. The young king of 1 Samuel chapter 16, who was anointed, is now king over all Israel. And his reign and triumph is found in 2 Samuel 1 through 10. This is all the book of 2 Samuel. And chapters 1 through 10 is a focus on David in triumph. That, in turn, comes in 2 parts. Number 1, he moved from king of nothing to his reign over Judah. His reign over Judah is recorded in chapters 1 through 4. And in this period of time, the capital was Hebron. Hebron in Judah. The duration of his reign over part of Israel at Hebron was 7.5 years. The second part of David in triumph is his reign extended to all Israel. His reign over the entire nation. And that is found in 2 Samuel chapter 5 through chapter 10. The capital at that time was Jerusalem, the place from which he reigned over all Israel. The duration of that reign was 33 years. David reigned over Israel, or over the nation, in part for 7.5 years, and in whole for 33 years. That's David in his victory and in his triumph. However, beginning with about his 20th year of reign, move into the reign over all Israel for 20 years, and you have David in sin. That is recorded in 2 Samuel chapter 11 and 12. And this was occurred, or this occurred as to time after he had been on the throne of the entire nation 20 years. And the crime or the sin committed by David was double. Adultery with Bathsheba and the consequent murder of Uriah. The theme that comes into this period is a very sober theme. David confesses and he is forgiven his sin, but he pays for it the rest of his ministry. And so the consequences, while there is full and complete and immediate forgiveness upon confession, the consequences are going to last for the rest of his life. And therefore, we can outline in 2 Samuel the last phase, which is David in trouble. And David in trouble is chapter 13 through chapter 24. And that, in turn, breaks into two parts. Trouble, one, in his family. And that is in chapter 13 through 18. And the trouble in his family can be summarized very briefly. His son, Amnon, rapes his sister, Tamar. His son, Absalom, in turn, murders Amnon. So the two sins will be rape and murder. Do you see anything? See anything there? What were David's two great sins? Adultery and murder. What did his, what were the repercussions in his family? Rape and murder. Sexual sin and murder. So you have one of the prime examples of retributive justice. What David did, he paid in kind. For his adultery with Bathsheba was paid for by the rape of his daughter Tamar. What he did to Uriah, namely murder him, was matched by the murder of his son Amnon. Very, very sober lesson in retributive justice, meaning what goes around comes around. Second, David in trouble in his family, and now David in trouble in his nation. And you have in 19 through 24 great problems in the nation of Israel following David's sin. Confession brings forgiveness. Absolutely. Confession does not negate consequences. You can confess and confess and confess, and yet very often the consequences, not always, sometimes God is gracious enough to say, I'll forgive your sin and I'll set aside the consequences. But that's not the rule. The rule is, you did it, you pay for it, can you be forgiven? Absolutely. Instantaneously and totally. Can you avoid the consequences? No, you'll have to pay and pay and pay and pay. And David, in his great confession, gets forgiveness of sins, but he paid the bill. All right? That then is the general background. Now let's go to the specific historical setting, 2 Samuel chapter 11. The general setting first, which is the book of 2 Samuel, and now the specific setting of two Psalms. And the specific setting is 2 Samuel 11 and 12, matching Psalm 32 and matching Psalm 51. And it all revolves about one theme. And that is with the sin of 2 Samuel, or two sins of 2 Samuel 11 and 12, is matched by refusal to confess for about a year. According to Psalm 32, David, and 51, David waited about a year. He did not confess until a baby was born. And when the baby was born, he finally confessed his sin. And thus, we're covering in this chapter about 2 years. So, his specific setting revolves about two things. One, it is sin concerning adultery. And second, sin concerning murder. First, adultery, then murder. And this is 2 Samuel 11, 1 through 5, concerns his adultery. So let's go to 2 Samuel now, chapter 11, and note several things. Number one, what was his condition that for his sin? In what condition was the setting for adultery? Chapter 11, verse 1. By the way, it's easy to trace out what David did in this chapter by looking only at the verbs. And let me read it through verse 5, and I'll stress only the verbs that describe the action. Verse 1. Then it happened in the spring, at the time when kings go out to battle, that David sent Joab. Note that mentally. Sent Joab. And his servants with him and all Israel, and they destroyed the sons of Ammon and besieged Rabbah. But David stayed in Jerusalem. So the verb in verse 1, he sent Joab, and then the participle that describes it, while staying in Jerusalem. He sent Joab. Verse 2. Now when evening came, David arose from his bed and walked around on the roof of the king's house. And from the roof, our next verb, he saw. He said he saw a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful in appearance. I'll only make one sentence comment, and then I'm going to drop it, because I don't really know the answer. But I think it's fair to say, and you read all the commentators on David's sin, and they talk about what David did. I have a question. Why was she bathing in public view? Have any of you ever worried about getting caught taking a bath because the window was up or the curtain was pulled back? I don't know the answer to that question, and I'm not really willing to place blame on Bathsheba, but it's a good question. Why was she visible to public view? Verse 3, our next verb. So David sent and inquired about the woman, and one said, "Is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" Notice David was fully informed. He knew who she was, and he knew she was married, very clearly. So verse 4, and our fourth verb, David sent messengers and took her, and when she came to him, he lay, or as the Hebrew puts it, he slept with her. He sent, he saw, he sent and asked questions, and then he slept with her. And when she had purified herself from her uncleanness, she returned to her house. And our fifth verb and fifth verse, and the woman conceived. And she sent and told David and said, "I am pregnant." And that then begins to give the condition for the first sin, the sin of adultery. When we begin with verse 6, you have the second sin concerning murder. And the murder becomes focal down through the end of chapter 11. It's in the center of everything. And Psalm 32 and Psalm 51 is going to tell what was going on in David's mind when this happened. Now, a little more about the condition that's described in verse 1. It happened in the spring, at the time when kings go out to battle, that David sent Joab. In other words, David didn't go to battle. He sent a substitute. Sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they destroyed the sons of Ammon and besieged Rabbah, but David stayed at Jerusalem. And it's important to note the condition for the sin is very simple. David sent Joab as a substitute. When David had been going to battle and leading the nation as the kings should for 20 years. And so when you look at verse 1, he sent someone else to lead Israel in the place of himself for the first time in 20 years. David had always led Israel in battle. David had led Israel in battle like he should have done. But now he sends someone else. And as he sends someone else, he stays out of the battle lines and he is idle in Jerusalem. I'll make a simple note. David had time on his hands. David had time on his hands. That is always dangerous. David had nothing to do but look at Playboy. Nothing else to do. The guys are out there in battle. Joab's leading them. And I have time to do whatever I please. And it's interesting to note the connection. David had time on his hands and he fell into sin. He got into trouble. And, you know, that is a tremendously important thing, and I address primarily men. There's not an honest man alive who doesn't see a cute little thing and think thoughts. What do you do? Don't dwell on it. Take control of your mind, and one of the features of true Christian manhood is the fact that you cannot help the thoughts that come to your mind, but you don't have to dwell on them. You don't have to live on them. And that isn't very complicated. You can even, as you're starting to dwell on the wrong thoughts, and there she walks, and ain't she pretty, you can at least say A, B, C, D, E, F, G, or 1, 2, 3, 4, or alpha, beta, gamma, that's better yet. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta, eta, theta, iota, kappa, lambda, mu, and so forth through the Greek alphabet. You can at least take control of your mind. And David didn't do that. He just sauntered up onto the roof and looked down, and there was Bathsheba, and he wasn't doing anything else. He had time on his hands, and this is a tremendously important thing, I think, to remember. This was the setting for the sin of David. He didn't have anything else to do, and the nation was out fighting for the first time in 20 years. And it's very interesting to note also that he's not a green king. He's an experienced king. He's been around for a long time. 20 years of battles? 20 years of battles. But he fell because he had time on his hands. And I'm not saying that's the only reason for the sin of David of both murder and adultery. But it is certainly the setting for it. It's also interesting to note that sin always has a chain reaction. You can't ever have one rear-end collision. You hit the car in front of you, and the car in front of you, and the car in front of you, and the car in front of you. It's a domino effect. And the adultery directly led to the plot for murder. He didn't have anything against Uriah, except if he's going to cover this, he's got to do something, and so he does. So the condition for sin is first. Second, the sin was then followed by contemplation. Of his sin. And that comes into verses 2 and 3. Now when evening came, David arose from his bed. That's interesting what he's been doing all day. He's been sleeping all day long, sleeping until evening, and walked around on the roof of the king's house. What was he doing up there? I don't know. He just woke up and took a walk. And from the roof, he saw a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful in appearance. He was attracted to a legitimately beautiful woman, and there's nothing wrong with that. God has made women to be pretty, to be beautiful. That's part of it. And I don't think there's anybody alive, but what if you think back at the first time you went out or dated your husband or wife? What was the attraction? Character or sex? My, you look pious. Of course, it was physical, wasn't it? It couldn't have been anything else. You didn't know anything else. Consequently, and you might have liked their voice or their personality, and that's all fine. But basically, a first attraction was contemplation of physical beauty. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing sinful about that. That's fine. But it is interesting to note that's a feature in the fall of David. So he, and notice, by the way, there's nothing wrong with seeing. But he didn't end with that, did he? He saw a woman who was very beautiful, and what does verse 3 say? So David sent. Now we're getting on the age. He saw, and then he acted on his thoughts. So here's what we have in verses 3 and 4. David saw, and David acted on his thoughts. He saw, and then he acted on his thoughts. Now, I don't want to come off with a pious approach to this and saying David should have never looked. I don't know whether he should have looked or not. I tend to say he saw a beautiful... Well, I tend to say this. Here is a beautiful woman taking a bath. And you guys don't have to be this honest, but wouldn't you look? Well, Daryl's got the funniest smile on his face. Of course you would. You're male. You're made that way. But that doesn't mean act. And that's very, very important, I think, on Christian manhood, is you learn to see and perceive, and you learn to say no to your actions. And you don't act on what you see. And you learn to put this into the background and not act on it. David didn't. David saw, and David acted on his thoughts. Third, we have the commission of sin next. And the commission of sin is in verse 5. No, it's not verse 5. The commission of the sin is verse 4. And David sent messengers and took her. And when she came to him, he slept with her. And when she had purified herself from her uncleanness, this is a liturgical and ritual in the Old Testament, she returned to her house. That's the commission of the sin. And then you have verse 4, which is the consequence. Of sin. And that is in verse 5. And when the woman conceived. And let me stop and comment for just a moment on this. Have you noticed today that we have been ingenious in eliminating consequences of our actions? For crying out loud, David, why didn't you use a condom? Well, David didn't. And I think it's interesting that much of our move today is in the area of eliminating the consequences of sin. Why has God made consequences to sin? God has made consequences to sin because it's healthy. And because consequences of knowing if you do this, you will pay the price. is a great deterrent. And so, consequence note is a deterrent to sin. And parents and Christian parents by the thousands put in the hands of their sons and their daughters the means whereby sin will no longer be deterred. I've had over the years men ask, do you think I ought to give my daughter something for birth control? And my answer is no. Teach her to be moral. And if she's not moral, let her pay the price. I know that sounds harsh, especially for our day, but that is biblical. Is that God always built in deterrent for sin, and he built in deterrent for sin by attaching consequences to what you do. You do this and you pay this way. You act this way and here's what's going to happen to you. And it's a very biblical concept, and one I think that we have eliminated to a large degree, is that we should be able, should we not, to do whatever we please without any consequence. Isn't that basically modern thinking? You can do anything you want because we have learned how to eliminate the consequences. And who built in the consequences? God built in the consequences, and therefore they are very important. Now, the first area then is specific setting concerning adultery. And second one is concerning murder. Concerning adultery. And now concerning murder. Note, and this is down beginning in chapter 11, 6 through 27. Now what happens is almost humorous, because David goes from plan 1 to plan 2, to plan 3, to plan 4. And they're all little cameos of ingenious thinking that says, here's the way I can cover my sin and hide it. And we're going to find that, well, it's a good time to do it. In David's four plans, they're all flawed by one thing. Look at chapter 11 and the last sentence of the chapter, and what is it? It's the only thing David couldn't plan around. It's the only thing that he couldn't avoid in the whole process. And when you come down to his multiple plans, you finally come down to the last sentence of verse 11. But the thing that David had done was evil in the sight of the Lord. And that means, David, you're dead. Because whatever you do on a horizontal plane to cover won't work. Because ultimately it is your relationship to God. And therefore, let me read from Psalm 32. The narrative of how David looked back on this episode and how he felt later. Psalm 32. Now this again, keep in mind, is after a year. Verse 5, I acknowledged my sin to thee, and my iniquity I did not hide. Now, I did not hide is talking about the ultimate, when he finally confessed it. But he did hide it for a year. And it's interesting in the chapter 32, verse 1, how blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. It's really interesting that David covered his sin. And when he uncovered it, God covered it forever. David covered his sin for a year. When he uncovered it and confessed it to God, God covered that sin and he covered it forever. So we're going to have in front of us here in Psalm 32 and in Psalm 51 a great great story. Now let's go back and close out with 2 Samuel chapter 12. We'll pick up next time with what were the four plans. And we'll find out that the plans were ones that we would probably have used too. The lady's pregnant. Her husband is in battle. Are you devious enough to think of what would you do? For crying out, call him back and get him in bed with his wife. Then it will be his baby. And he tried that. And we'll talk about it next time. But notice in chapter 12. And in chapter 12, you have Nathan coming along. At least 9 months has passed and the baby is born. And you have two important lessons. Number one, forgiveness of sin, yes. Elimination of the consequences of sin, no. First, yes. Nathan the prophet has nailed David as the one who is guilty, and in verse 13 of chapter 12, David said to Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. And the Lord did not say, okay, you're on probation. The Lord forgave him immediately. And Nathan said to David, the Lord also has taken away your sin, and you shall not die. So notice the Lord in measure has removed the consequences, but upon confession, there is immediate forgiveness. Consequences, verse 14. However, because by this deed you have given occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme, the child that is born to you shall surely die. Forgiven, yes. Lifting of the consequences, no. And we'll pick up at that point next hour, and then we'll go into David's thoughts during this year of time. In one of the most enlightening psalms I know of, and that is going to be a psalm talking about what we call today psychosomatic illness. David did not confess, and by refusal to confess, he was physically, and emotionally eaten alive. And that, again, is a great lesson going clear back to ancient times when they had never heard of psychosomatic medicine. Well, David knew about it, and he says, my body fell apart in 1 year. When God, through the wonderful blessing of consequences, began to work on me, and my conscience and my body fell apart. Great lesson. We'll pick it up next hour. Father, we're thankful for your truth in Christ's name. Amen.